International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and this is broadcast number 483, March the 8th, 1981. I know that there are a lot of names thrown out on this broadcast within a one-hour period of time, and a lot of you are long subscribers to the tapes and listeners to the broadcast. This has been a 9 years ongoing series. Some of you are new listeners. There's new subscribers all the time to the tapes, new tapes going overseas to Norway now, Nova Scotia, and other countries. I try to keep the pace similar every week with the same tempo and using new names. And even if they are difficult for you to understand, I don't expect you to remember all of these names of the interlocking links. The main tone that you get from listening 1 week or 2 weeks or 1 year or 2 years is that something is happening and that there are crimes being committed that are not investigated by the authorities, that the media puts out pieces of information but doesn't make the connecting links. And what I try to do is to take as many newspapers and books and articles and documents, government documents or autopsy reports or Senate hearings or congressional hearings, and put them together and try to make some sense out of the news. I don't think major events just happen. There is a group of events that precedes it. There are these events that come and follow each other that I believe are purposely set up by individuals at specific times and places and meeting places, and there's a tacit agreement among certain persons that these events will take place, and they do, in fact, take place. Last week, at just about the end of the program, I read part of the article I wrote in 1973, the Senate Select Committee is part of the cover-up, and part of the motives for the SLA, because I believe that the creation of the SLA links to the Nguyen Bank that I talked about and the Wells Fargo scandal that's taking place out here in California. And, yeah, I think it was the third article I wrote in the summer of 74, the SLA is the CIA, that I read the motives for William Colby of the Phoenix Program in Southeast Asia setting up the SLA here in California. Shana Alexander wrote a book on Patty Hearst trial she attended every day called Anyone's Daughter. And in that book, she wrote about some of the theories of conspiracy around SLA. And she said in the book, how far is far out? Who's crazy now? There's talk about Donald DeFries working for the CIA to discredit blacks and left-wingers and so forth. She said, consider it that very period in our history in 1973 that the government at home was concocting the Tom Charles Houston plan, and abroad it was waging an entirely illegal war in Vietnam and Laos and a secret illegal war in Cambodia. The CIA was secretly conducting Operation Chaos, which was disturbance at home, huge clandestine illegal espionage operation against blacks, student radicals, anti-war dissidents, that included computers with an index of over 300,000 names and organizations, most of them Americans. They were not connected in any way to espionage or international espionage. For that matter, consider the murder kit the CIA kept in its closet for their dirty spook tricks, and she goes into those, and the CIA experiments with LSD and nuclear radiation tolerance on unsuspecting servicemen. She quoted a book, The Choice, by Samuel Yett, a black journalist, Y-E-T-T-E, it's called The Choice, where he says the government must choose one of three courses to deal with black people, liberation, pacification, or liquidation. And she refers to his references to liquidation, which I call the King Alfred Plan from the National Security Council. And this author, Samuel Yett, said in The Choice that the only hope lay in liquidating and destroying the blacks, and concentration camps are secretly being built, black sterilization programs are being planned, and the U.S. Navy intelligence has completed a list that indicates that a few white people might object, but the plans will go into operation. Then she said, anyone who thinks Yeti's book is far out has yet to encounter the work of Mae Brussel, who publishes the conspiracy newsletter. And, of course, these tape cassettes are the newsletter. She's in California. She says that after the Hearst kidnapping, she put out a special issue, and she refers to those 40 pages. The SLA is an outgrowth of the CIA's Phoenix program in Vietnam, and the purpose was to destroy the left in America. In her view, Angela Atwood and others in the SLA were paid agents. The People in Need program was calculated disaster, deliberate provocateur action to hasten Patty's conversion to the SLA. And then she repeats in her book, Anyone's Daughter, some of the motives that I had on the air for the creation of a counterintelligence kidnapping operation in the United States to create fear of kidnapping and suspicion of terrorists, to link terrorists to international guerrilla groups, to escalate fear of Mao Zedong, which happened, to drum up support for the UCLA Center for the Study and Reduction of Violence, using Nazi doctors and American psychiatrists for zombies, assassins, informers, and so forth, discredit the poor, and rehearse for the massive food handouts. Then she said, Ms. Russell believes that the true aim of the United States government is to set up a police state and impose martial law, and to that end, the CIA invents, staffs, and funds organizations like the SLA and sets up these events like the murder of Dr. Foster and the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, and even arranged their cremation in Los Angeles. And Shayna Alexander added, the fangs may be rubber and the blood ketchup, but reading her pages is like a horror movie triple feature. Your back of your neck prickles nonetheless. By the time Patty Hearst's ordeal was at an end, she wrote, America had become a different world. Now, this is where I disagree with Shayna Alexander. I don't think America changed when Patty Hearst's ordeal was over. I think it continued getting bad. She wrote that Nixon and Kissinger had been toppled, and Vietnam was behind us. What she didn't anticipate was the Middle East or El Salvador or all the other military juntas since that time that we've put in, like South Korea or Bolivia, and so forth. And she said the Warren Commission report had been exposed as a cover-up. The assassination of Martin Luther King was shadowed by real, not paranoid, doubts. The U.S. government murder plots against Castro had been exposed. But then she went on to say, last year's conspiracy freak look like this year's far-seeing visionary and possibly next year's Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter. So while she thought that everything in this country was safe once Nixon and Kissinger were out and Patty Hearst was home, she did say that those people that see conspiracy in these events may turn out to be right after all. And I think she missed the point that we could sit back and relax. And even Shayna Alexander went to New York to cover the Jean Harris, Dr. Tannauer, the trial for murdering Dr. Tannauer. And she's going to write a book on that like she did on Patty Hearst, but she's going to miss the entire point of the shooting and who Jean Harris is. And once again, she identifies with a middle-aged woman and her frustrations at not getting Tannauer to agree to marry her if that's what she really wanted, that she's going to miss the point a second time around. She's one of our leading journalists, but she's going to continue missing the point until she investigates some of the facts that she throws out in the process of just mentioning them. If she took one of them and went into it, she'd have a different view of history. I've been talking about bank failures and missing money, and I'll do a lot of that in the next few weeks. But last week, I just want to mention there was a computer foul-up of trillions of dollars in Chicago. The Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago was tied up Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and the transfer of trillions of dollars between the banks across the country were tied up for 3 days. Of course, the implications are tremendous if this should happen again or for a longer period of time. And speaking of the very thing I was afraid of when Patty Hearst was kidnapped in the Operation Chaos, Ronald Reagan has asked the military to go into uniforms now. There's an article this week. All military men at the Department of Defense are to wear their uniforms in the courtyard ceremonies. The Navy will wear their uniforms. Officers and enlisted men in Washington starting May the 1st are to be in uniform. The Air Force will have guidelines encouraging them to wear uniforms as real and good military men. The Army Chief of Staff and so forth were told during the inauguration they would be expected to be wearing uniforms in Washington. So starting May the 1st, you will see the Army out in uniform and no longer in the civilian clothes they've been wearing for a while. And Ronald Reagan, as president, chose Mr. Caspar Weinberger as Secretary of Defense. And an article in the Washington Post, Weinberger, in his first message to Congress, said, "My mission is to rearm America. You have the arms, you have the uniforms, and they'll cook up the war." Another sad article about El Salvador, and there's so many of them, New York Times, John Cruzden, it says, U.S. returns illegal immigrants who are fleeing the Salvador war. We will take immigrants who come from a country that is to the left to show how bad their government is, but when they flee fascism, they get sent home. An article by Maxine Cheshire, she always has good ones. I want to update one. She said that Mr. Fratriano is writing a book on Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra tried to kill the idea of the movie of his book that came out, and out of vengeance, he's going to write an entire book on Frank Sinatra and the political shenanigans and the mob links of Sinatra, and also how Sinatra was close to George Bush and asked to be part of the CIA to help the CIA. I believe that Sinatra, along with his friend Giancana and Rosselli, were always part of the CIA, but he wants to be acknowledged as a very important, pivotal person in the CIA. So she wrote this week that Fratriano, if he lives long enough, will get a book out on Sinatra. Meanwhile, Sinatra is building a San Simeon type of castle in Las Vegas, $30 million home with 60 rooms, airstrip, 2 Olympic-sized pools, and he's to move to Las Vegas and have his headquarters there, which is what he always wanted. An article in the New York Times, Bay of Pig veteran is convicted of not paying $2 million in taxes. Miami, a Bay of Pigs veteran who owns a beauty parlor, didn't pay $2 million on his income. His income was more than $7 million. And this particular Bay of Pigs veteran, Jose Madara Alvaro Cruz, 42 years old, was in court because he owed $2 million in taxes. The New York Times article said that Mr. Alvaro had earned the money but didn't say how. You might guess how, and wouldn't you think the federal agents would want to know how he made $7 million in a beauty parlor, probably for one curl job. So he's going to pay $2 million taxes on a $7 million income. There's a picture in the San Francisco Chronicle of a Chicago family portrait taken recently of all the top bosses of organized crime sitting in the Chicago restaurant, the Chicago Underworld. The reason it was printed was that they're investigating a clampdown on sports betting activity, and of course that will go into the Wells Fargo activity. Carlos Marcellus got a deportation order. He got one in 1953, and the Associated Press said the court order moves a little slowly. He's still involved with the Bri-Lab investigation that Jimmy Carter started, and Marcello can't be deported if he has to answer the other charge. But they went on to say that he's getting to be an old man. He's in his 70s, and the last time he was deported was by Attorney General Robert Kennedy, who had him flown to Guatemala. And, of course, Carlos Marcello was named in the House Select hearings on the assassination as being a possible conspirator in killing John Kennedy, but he's never charged with that. But he did get a little bit of a slap on the wrist with a possible deportation, and if it takes 30 more years to do, he'll be over 100. I'm going to go in detail in a few weeks on an article of man from Hong Kong, this Sir Yu Kong Pao. The Sunday London Times had an article on him in November. He is making a bid to run Hong Kong, putting up millions of dollars to take care of Hong Kong, the Shanghai Bank, Jardines, and the Jockey Club. He's a multi-billionaire, supposed to be the richest shipper in the world. He's the gentleman that put up $50,000 towards Ronald Reagan's inauguration and was at the party in Washington. He's just beginning to surface, and I haven't seen his name in very many books through the years, even though he suddenly became the richest shipbuilder in the world. We hear of Daniel Ludwig and Onassis and the Greek shipbuilders. I got a letter this week from a person asking me a lot of questions. I won't answer all of them, maybe one a week. But he said, most of us believe that former SS General Heinrich Himmler poisoned himself and died. But he is alive and well with a new disguise and name. He has perfected his final solution to include blacks as well as Jewish comedians. Who is he today? I don't know who Himmler is today. I've heard that he was alive. When I was in New York doing a lot of radio shows with Bob Fass, a German used to call on the air every time I started talking about Nazis, and somebody told me that he was a journalist that had come to this country and was hired by a major newspaper syndicate and was a writer in New York City. Those of you that study Nazis who listen to this show or take the tapes might do some research on Himmler and different books to see where you think Himmler went. I got out The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, History of Nazi Germany by William Shire. And at the very end of the book, he has one last two pages, on page 1141, a brief epilogue. He tells how Heinrich Himmler walked around from May the 6th until May 21st or the 23rd and was picked up by the British. Two British picked him up, that he had shaved his mustache, had a black patch over his eye, and when the British army captain went to him, he took a vial of potassium cyanide that was in his mouth. Now, I wonder where he is buried. If the British had him, they must have a burial site. Who saw him? Who identified the body? That is all that I know. You may look in your books and see what stories you have about Himmler escaping from Germany, but this certainly isn't a definitive study of page 1100. By the time you get through that book, the next to last page, he just has two sentences that Himmler took the cyanide and died. So many of the Nazis, 150,000, had left the continent and gone to South America, Shanghai, and South Africa and the Middle East, that it's very hard to believe that walking loose all this time, that he carried this capsule in his mouth in case there's one day that he would be captured, that he walked around with it all that time. I'm going to do a little bit more later on that Bible group. The gentleman that was killed this week, Chester Bitterman, from Pennsylvania, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, that was killed down in Columbia. I have a long article about him from the Sunday LA Times, February the 8th, that he was accused of being in the CIA all the time that he was there, that the group that he works with have been linked to the CIA. It's called the Summer Institute of Linguistics, and it's funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development, Canadian and European International Development Agencies, and host countries. The people that killed him, the M16, said that they should get their CIA people out of Bogota, they should get them out of Colombia, and they resented this group going down there. Wycliffe was a front for the CIA, according to the Los Angeles Times, and the claim is that their workers have destroyed the cultures and the people and tried to take indigenous people and proselytize them and break up any organization they have to maintain their own culture. His mother, Mary Bitterman, said, "God makes no mistakes. It was God's will that he die." And I'm sure that the American Summer Institute of Linguistics will make another John Birch out of him, the South American John Birch, and he can become a hero. The family didn't expect him to live, but the money came from AID, among other things, which is known to be a CIA organization. In Utah, they convicted Joseph Paul Franklin of the murder of two black men, and they've asked immediately for the death penalty. A woman that was married to Joseph Paul Franklin or his girlfriend said that he was linked to heavily funded organizations in the United States and had companions. And I have many reasons to be against the death penalty, but one of the main reasons is that if the brainwashing wears off and you find out who gives this person money to travel to Kentucky and New York and Utah and all over the South, you would get a better view of who is doing these racist killings. He is allegedly the person that shot at Vernon Jordan May 28th of this last year, and he was supposed to have been the one who cut out the hearts of the black men in Buffalo, New York. Those killings have stopped, and the hearts have not been cut out since. He got around to a lot of places, had a lot of money, was in Oklahoma City and Buffalo, New York, and all over the South. And as I say, his wife had said that, or his former girlfriend had said that he was heavily funded by powerful organizations. And if he gets the death penalty, of course, the truth will go with him. The long article in the Washington Post, Sunday, March the 1st, Paul Laxalt, to understand Ronald Reagan, meet his closest friend in the Senate. Now, I've done many broadcasts or discussions of Paul Laxalt, and I'll get back to this article for those of you who don't get the Washington Post, but in case you can get to a library in the meantime, you may want to read it. Laxalt is the fellow that worked with the Howard Hughes Organization, the CIA, the FBI, was the selected so-called president by the Summa Corporation, the Hughes people, and the CIA. But instead of running for president, he's the liaison of the Congress to Ronald Reagan, and he was with Ronald Reagan throughout the entire campaign, running his campaign. There was a death this week of Jerry Landauer, 49 years old. He died of that very well-known disease called apparent heart attack. He won an award as a winning reporter. He worked for the Wall Street Journal and Washington Post. He'd worked for the New York Times. In August of 73, he broke the story to the Justice Department that they were investigating Spiro Agnew in connection with bribes and fraudulent tax returns. This forced Agnew to resign October the 10th, 1973, just a few months later. Well, Jerry Landauer just dropped dead this week. He was taken to George Washington University Hospital and described as a heart attack, and he was dead. One of the few journalists that really stayed with the story and got the story out and got Agnew out of office. He's passed away, age 49. Another article about the Argentine police raid the Human Rights Office. They seized the leading activists. The raids were the first crackdown since the Reagan administration took office, and now they figured that the abuses would occur again, that Ronald Reagan has recognized Chile and the junta in El Salvador, and the Argentine people could sweep in and take all of the papers and offices and the organization work of the civil rights people. And they're beginning the arrests and disappearances. In the last couple of years, there were 10,000 people that disappeared. And with Reagan in office, they feel cling to do these things. This is why I say somebody like Shane Alexander is a little naive, just use the word naive, to believe that when Vietnam was over and Kissinger and Nixon were out of power, that we could sit back and relax. The very things that I was writing about in 1973 and 74 that I saw coming down are what we're getting now. The reason you didn't get them sooner was because of Watergate and the transition and using Jimmy Carter after Watergate for this group to build up their muscle. There's a book by Donald Freed I don't think I mentioned on the program with Fred Land. It's called Death in Washington, The Murder of Orlando Letelier. You should get this book, published by Lawrence Hill and Company, and because it links to the Alpha 66 group and the trained assassins that have been successful in Indonesia, Iran, Guatemala, Brazil, and the Chilean fascists, and how they killed Sandra Moffat and Letelier in Washington, D.C. Because the same Alpha 66 that did these murders are pushing Ronald Reagan right now to make war in Cuba, and I have articles that they're pressing him for war in Cuba to kill Fidel Castro and get going. They're ready to get back to Cuba. There's one article in Spotlight that always eggs this kind of conversation on. It's a far-right newspaper magazine. It says, on January the 16th, the FBI caught seven anti-Castro Cubans sending some more explosive devices into Cuba. The Alpha 66 is well organized inside of Cuba, and they're saying to Ronald Reagan, all we can hope for is that President Reagan will call off the dogs and let us get down to the business of getting rid of Castro and the Soviets. The Alpha 66, with headquarters in New Jersey and Florida and all over the world, are ready to get into Cuba. There were several deaths in the Bay Area, many of them in the last week or so, and I will update some of these for you on other programs, but I'm going to pass them over now, maybe 3 weeks from now or so, just run down 30 or 40 of some of the most important deaths that we should have followed in the last month. One other article about Frank Sinatra. He's teamed up with a man named Helmsley, Mr. Helmsley, who he wants to build a sound studio motion picture projector in New York City, a place we're making movies between 61st to 66th Street. It's now owned by the New York Times, and they want to take part of the 93-acre Penn Central Railroad yards. This man is a multimillionaire from Argentina that would put up billions of dollars for Frank Sinatra. His name is Harry Helmsley, H-E-L-M-S-L-E-Y, the town's richest real estate mogul with millions of dollars and connections down to Argentina, and Sinatra wants him to help him build this film studio. So Sinatra is really in power today with a lot of money behind him. A couple of them, a bank official slain with a carving knife. This is in Philadelphia. A bank official from the Elegant Society Hill section, the daughter of Arthur Gherkin, longtime executive. She's a Philadelphia National Bank vice president. Nothing was disturbed and no robbery. And I mention this because there are many Philadelphia connections coming out now between the Alpha 66, the New Jersey group, Turple Corcola, various assassination teams, and Philadelphia connections out to China Lake and to California, and the taking of weapons from the armory and sending them to Libya and around the world linked to the CIA. And there's a lot of money being taken from banks and a lot of accidents and murders involving bank officials. So she's a vice president of the Philadelphia National Bank, and she was slain. And finally, this week, they exhumed that body of John Spengelink to see if he was murdered before he went in to the electric chair. And by looking at a body that was dead 2 years, Mr. Thomas Noguchi said no, he hadn't been murdered in advance. But the person who asked for the body to be exhumed said that they had his mouth shut, and they have acknowledged that they bound his mouth and wouldn't let him talk. And what he wanted to reveal and wasn't allowed to reveal was his last statement about the involvement of drug abuses in Florida and his information about organized crime. I only read that in one article. It was a UPI story, but only one paper carried the sentence about the organized crime and what he knew about the crime and why he was drugged and beaten and his mouth gagged. They had towels in his mouth when he went to the electric chair so that he couldn't, even at that time, say anything about the connections. And one other death I do want to discuss is John Lennon's. There's a whole issue of a magazine, Volume 1, Section 1, and I'll have the address on printed sheets if you want it, or I can give it to you now. The magazine is called The Legend of John Lennon Conspiracy? And it's about John Lennon's comeback. Was it a threat to the CIA? What the FBI is hiding from John Lennon's murder? The secret world of Mark David Chapman? The secret message revealed, was he killed because of it? And can we get this information from the FBI? They said you'll have to get a court order. They compare the locking up of the information on Lennon as tight as the John Kennedy assassination. The address is SJ Publication, 2470 LeMoyne Avenue, LeMoyne Avenue, Fort Lee, New Jersey, 07024. I hope some of you are used to this program. Keep a pencil handy, but if not, you can write to me at Box 22511, Carmel, California, 93922. And if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll give you the address of this magazine. They have a whole team in New York City investigating a former homicide investigator and a group of people working on the gangland slaying of John Lennon and asking very important questions and trying to find out more about Chapman and the belief that the CIA and the FBI were behind that murder. So there is some progress being made. It took years for people to get in their heads the idea that there was a conspiracy in the John Kennedy assassination or Martin Luther King or Robert Kennedy or Malcolm X. But now the familiarity of that so-called lone assassin, the crazy one, is wearing thin, and the cover story doesn't wash as well, and more people are seriously getting into this. So this is an article, a whole magazine, actually 60 pages, on the possible conspiracy and the reasons for silencing John Lennon and the official stories of why they're silencing it. Well, that's an update of some of the stories on the news. In the second half, I'm going to continue unraveling some of the pieces of the puzzle that I've been talking about the last few weeks about several banks, and they're missing millions of dollars, and spend 30 minutes just on that subject again to keep you up on that. In the meantime, we'll take a one-minute break, and then we'll get back to that subject.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.